come. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it. The old ball game.
I am Harry Carey. We're alive today and broadcasting the World Series. You wouldn't believe it. Hey, listen to this. Dirk of UFODigest.com received an email, I believe Saturday. It was supposed to be from Stan Fulham. And Stan was predicting that a fleet of UFOs would circle first the World Series stadium and then land, and then the ETs would come out and start shaking hands with the baseball players. Stan says the email is bogus. He never sent it. He never made a prediction like that. Stan, a lot of people have been trying to discredit you since this book came out. I mean, they even made up a fake Facebook page on you. The name of the book by Stan Fulham is Challenges of Changes. To say the least, evidently, Stan, this book is controversial. You were an officer with NORAD at one time. We have Stan Fulham on the line now from his home in Canada. Stan, welcome to the show, and I assume the book is doing pretty well.
It's doing extremely well. The reaction that we've received in the last several days was very much beyond our expectations.
Stan, before we start talking about your book, let's give our listeners a little bit of background about you. You go back to World War II, and that was when you first had your experiences, I believe.
You see, I was in the Air Force during the war and served in Bomber Command, in which I first experienced a UFO. But I was discharged in 1946, and then I traveled around the world, went to university, all this sort of thing, and then I returned to the permanent Air Force several years later. And when I returned, I was no longer a flyer. I was known as a fighter controller in NORAD, because your listeners have got to understand is that when the jet fighters take off against a supposedly enemy attack, these enemy bombers come on, it's usually at night, and they're not seeing. They don't know where they are, so where would the jet fighters go? They've got to be controlled towards in the direction of the bombers. That's what NORAD does. That's what the fighter controllers do, and we are trained to do that. I was trained at Tyndall Air Force Base, and later on more advanced training was at Yuma, and we would pick up these fighter sections like Alpha or Bravo or Charlie and so forth, and we would direct them towards the enemy bomber. And when they got within, well, at that time it was around 30 miles off the bomber, they picked them up on their own radar, then they would take over and would go in for the attack. That's what fighter controllers did. In addition there, too, of course, we monitored the skies 24 hours a day, and we plotted the any aircraft that was tracked by our radar would be plotted on these huge boards, plastic boards. I think you have some idea what those things are like. You very often see them in the movies and that type of
thing. Right.
So that's basically what it was. Now, when I was working in, then I'm working in NORAD. Now, one thing I want to make clear about this, Jerry, that NORAD is not a military organization. NORAD is a defense system. Now, it's operated and administered jointly by the USAF, by the United States Air Force, and the Canadian Air Force. And it has been that way right from the very start because it's a continental defense. So I was an officer in the Canadian Air Force, but I worked in the NORAD defense system, and the same with the USAF people. So anyway, one night, part of my job was also to act as the duty controller. So I'd go and sit in the radar base there, and we'd track these aircraft and identify which ones they were. If there were any unidentified aircraft traveling, it depend upon the circumstances, how fast they traveled, where they were going. We would scramble jet fighters to go out then to see what was going on. On this particular night, I reported for duty, and the man I was reported, the officer I was replacing, told me, he says, there are two UFOs. This is at midnight. And they are anchored about 2-3 miles away at the end of the base. There was an air base there, right next to the radar.
And, Stan, what is the name of that Air Force
base? Yeah, that was Comox Air Base on Comox on Vancouver Island. Yeah. So I come in and I checked the situation, and they hadn't been reported to NORAD as unknowns, which they should have been, but because they had been sitting there for about 2 hours. However, I decided that I had to do something about them, and so I scrambled two of the standby jets from the squadron, and they took off, and no sooner had they taken off than the UFOs disappeared very rapidly and flew south down and anchored out over the Pacific Ocean several miles west of Vancouver. Minutes later, when our jet fighters arrived in their proximity, they disappeared over the Pacific Ocean. Now, they and the jet fighters, I returned them back to base. Now, the next morning, I filed my report. Next morning, the base commander called, and he says, the media are calling from Vancouver, Seattle, Victoria. It's about some strange lights that were seen in the sky last night. But as you know, there was nothing unusual that happened last night, so there's no reason for us to be speaking to the media. And I understood, the squadron commander, of course, and I'm talking about the radar base squadron commander, understood exactly what the message was. Keep your mouth shut. You don't talk about these things. And so I would like to, Jerry, just explain what why this was, at least as far as I know.
Okay.
About 2-3 weeks later, NORAD called for a meeting with the squadron commander, the technical officer, and myself to discuss this particular incident. I was a bit apprehensive about that because I thought that maybe, you know, we normally think is that we've done something wrong, but they said, no, everything was fine, except that they're trying to refine their reporting process. They wanted to know more about how the spacecraft flew, about the lights, the different kind of lights, you know, all this sort of thing, and especially about their airworthiness. So I that was fine. We discussed it at length, and then later that evening, I sat in the bar with one of the officers, or a major of the intelligence officer with NORAD, and we had a long discussion about these things, and I told him about what the base commander had said, and he said, yeah. He says, there's a general agreement signed. It says it goes way back to 1956, and he had seen the document signed between the United States and Canada. He says, regulating and the information relating to the UFO phenomena. And he said, there were no signatures. And he showed me the document. I saw the document. There were no signatures to it, which is rather strange. But about this, I find it rather interesting is that, about 2-3 years ago, I was talking to Paul Elyer. Now, Paul Elyer in Canada was the former Minister of National Defense. And I told him about this particular incident, and he said he found it very strange. He said that he, as the minister, had never heard of it. He had never signed the document. The Prime Minister had never signed the document. And so I mentioned that to Dave, my good friend, the NORAD intelligence officer, earlier on we had discussed it. And he said, well, it won't be the first time that some of these documents, agreements, are signed at the military level and the politicians are not involved. I was quite surprised about that. Now, I can't confirm that this was the situation in this particular case. All I'm saying is that seemed to be the policy in North America for the control of information relating to reporting of UFOs. Well, look what happened to the commercial airlines. Of course, I don't know how old you are, but I'm thinking of going way back to the 50s and 60s, Jerry, and I can remember when the commercial airline pilots would report seeing UFOs, and it didn't take long before the airline companies could call in the pilots and tell them, you just keep quiet about this. You don't talk about these things because you're creating some sort of doubt in the public eye about our credibility and our professionalism, this sort of thing. So no more discussion about UFOs. Mm-hmm. So there was no more discussion. And the same thing with our pilots. They were, I mean, our military pilots. you don't discuss these things.
Stan, I want to be clear about the meeting. Who was it with?
Yes, well, that was with the NORAD people.
Mm-hmm.
NORAD intelligence, rather. And we had a very good meeting, and we understood what they were doing is refining the reporting process to have it standard. Because, you see, the thing is, in those days, NORAD knew all about the UFO cabal in Area 51. They knew all about them. In fact, three of the officers, including, I think, my friend Dave, had been there on a visit, so they were well aware of it. However, is that the Air Force didn't know everything about the UFOs. They knew about the Berties. The Berties are what we call the grays, the ones that have these very large bald heads and the black almond-shaped eyes with no ears and a slit for the mouth, about 3.5 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
We very often see them in our movies and that type of thing.
Right,
now,
right.
The Berties had been one that crashed, and the American Air Force had retrieved the spacecraft like they did to Roswell, and they had bodies and this sort of thing. So they were well aware of the Berties. And besides that, they had communicated with the Berties, now going back, way back, for years. People are not aware.
Are you saying before 1947?
Yes, even before 1939. Going back to the 1930s. Because, you see, the Berties are the ones who do the abductions.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else. There are no other aliens that do that. Now, I inquired from my principal source, the transcenders, just what was that situation? Why was that? Why were they doing these abductions? Apparently, the Berties, their little grays, are very brilliant. They have a very high intellect. In fact, they once mentioned to me, the transcenders mentioned to me that Eisenhower would have problems in their kindergarten. And they had cloned their bodies continuously over a period of thousands of years because they were brilliant, but they thought they could also live forever to be somewhat like gods. But God has universal laws, and one of them is the universal principle of diversity, that nobody, no being in the universe lives forever. They may live for thousands of years, some of them, but they will eventually die and cross over back to the spiritual world. So, anyway, but they cloned themselves to one day, they found out they no longer could reproduce. Their bodies could not reproduce other beings, other Berties.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are now on their last generation, although they live for about several hundred years. But they're on their last generation. And so what they did, they approached the Alien Council because they are a member of the Alien Council of Eight. That's the Pleiadians, the Alpha Centaurians, the Berties, the Orions, the Sirians, the Compsolites, the Pozzettis, Zeta Reticulis, and the Compsolites. And they begged the Alien Council for approval to abduct humans because our DNA was quite similar to theirs, and they were hoping to resolve their medical problem through these medical research. Not everybody at the Alien Council agreed to that. The Pleiadians especially, who happened to be our friends and protectors, were very, very much against it. But I suppose in compassion, the Alien Council said, okay, fine, under certain conditions, we will allow you to do that. And they've been doing this now for quite a long time. So that's the reason why they do these abductions. They're still doing it, by the way, but not as much as they used to, because they refined their medical research process. Like at one time, they very often captured humans and brought them up in their spacecraft and did their experiments there, and then they would release them back on Earth. But now they very seldom do that because they have these technologies which they install in the human being, and they can monitor from above just what the information they want to have.
So you're talking about the implants.
Yeah. Now, but years ago, they started to do an interbreeding process. And so they captured abducted quite a number of humans, brought them to the Berties planet, and there they built...
And what's that name of this species again?
Berties, B-O-O-T-E-S.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What? Where are they from? Another star system?
No, well, that's the star system, Berties.
Okay.
It's a German name, Bridget, okay, for the star system. We call them Bridges. They don't call themselves that. That's the name we gave them.
Okay.
But anyway, the thing is that, so they abducted. When I asked transgenders about a year ago before I published the third edition, I says, well, how many people are there in this internment camp on Bertis? And this internment camp, by the way, is quite comfortable. They have, it's under a dome where they have an atmosphere similar to one on Earth. They allow them to grow their own foods, and they intermix because they come from all different parts of the world, but they socialize and this sort of thing. But also there's a subject of all of these experiments, these medical experiments, and crossbreeding. They said there were 31,000, I think, 162 humans in that internment camp.
Wow.
Yes. And many have died there. So it is not exactly a very nice thing for human beings to experience. And people who have been abducted have gone through some pretty terrifying psychopathic experiences.
How about you, Stan? Have you been abducted?
No.
Okay.
No. I've read a great deal. I read all the books about, especially Dr. John Mack's books, about abductees. And, of course, the transgenders, not me, because I can't confirm it or deny it, but the transgender spiritual group, my principal sewers, you know, they confirm all of this.
I am interested in the transcenders, Stan. How did you become involved with this spiritual group?
Well, when I went back to the Air Force, well, first let's go back to World War II.
Okay.
I was in the prison camp in Poland, Allied 357. It was a prison camp for Allied airmen, or British airmen, American and Canadian. One hot July day in 1944, somebody ran into the hut and said, there's a rocket in the sky above. And we all ran out, we looked up, and there it was. It was this large red rocket flying from east to west at considerable height and at a great speed. It made no sound, and it had no wings. Now, we're all experts in aircraft recognition. We had to be in order to survive in aerial fights and that sort of thing. And we knew that this was no ordinary aircraft, but we didn't know what it was. And so we assumed, because the Germans had the V-1 and V-2 rockets, that it must be a German rocket, until somebody confounded the situation when he said, well, yeah, but it's flying from east to west, not from west to east. And we were in Poland, so obviously it must come from Russia, and Russia had no such technology. We soon forgot about it, you know, Jerry. We discussed it a bit, but we soon forgot about it because no one ever thought for one moment, it wasn't in our concept that this thing could be an alien phenomenon of any kind or an alien spacecraft. That was not the concept in World War II. I talked to fighter pilots who had experience with Foo Fighters. You know what Foo Fighters?
Yes, yes, of course.
Yeah, and they were telling me about their experience there. And again, never did they ever think is that it would be an alien vehicle or device of any kind. It wasn't until, I think, Donald Keyhoe's experience with flying saucers, what was in 1947, then the military started to take a look at this and differently and realize that perhaps they could be an alien phenomenon. That's when I became convinced that's what we had seen. We had seen a UFO. Now, then, of course, when I went back to the Air Force and I had my experience with those UFOs, one thing or another, but I still didn't know who they were, where were they from, why were they here, why the abductions, are they a threat? I still didn't have those answers. And Dave, my good friend, the NORAD intelligence officer, who had a great deal of information about the UFO phenomena, he didn't know either. He knew something about the Bertis, of course, and this sort of thing. And Nora had a lot of experience, in interactions and encounters with UFOs. Well, my experience was not unique. That happens and is still happening all across North America. So there's nothing unique about it. But who were they? Where were they here? Are they a threat? And the thing, I was talking to a very spiritual person one day, and I was telling her about my experiences with UFOs. And I said, you know, we tracked them on the radar. They appear. they disappear. They appear, disappear instantly. And then I told my friend about some fighter pilots I talked to. He said they were chasing a UFO in the mountains of British Columbia, and this UFO disappeared into the side of a mountain, flying at a tremendous speed. There was no crash, there was no explosion, and then a few moments later, it appeared out of the top of the mountain, hovered for a minute, and then flew away totally unscathed. I talked to a commercial airline pilot flying from Europe to the United States, and he was telling me he had the same experience. He witnessed a UFO dive into the ocean at a tremendous speed and reappear several miles further, completely unscathed. Now, that completely violates all of our known physical laws, that third-dimensional physical laws. That is impossible. Any craft that would crash into a mountainside would certainly disintegrate. So that raised my question about what's happening here. Obviously, they can disappear, however they do it, into another dimension, I suppose, and then reappear instantly. And I said, I've talked to scientists. I've talked to different scientists here in the United States. I've read every UFO book. There are no answers about that. And so she said, no. There are no answers on Earth. You'll have to get your answers from the aliens themselves, if you can. And so that means going to the fourth dimension. Or you can get your answers from the spiritual world in the fourth dimension. And she's recommended me to a channeler, Rick Thurston, who lives here in Canada. And he channels for the Transcender Group, a group of souls, about 43,000 souls, who worked as one mind and provide information for us. Well, I hesitated to do that, but I was so desperate for that information that one day I did contact Rick, and I made contact, and I discussed with the Transcenders for about half an hour. And I tell you, Jerry, that experience was quite a shocker, because I realized there was nothing about me that they did not know. How could they possibly know this? We had never met. They were in the spiritual realm. I'm down on Earth. But anyway, that was the beginning of my experience.
Stan, how long have you been in contact with this group through your channeler?
Say 11, 12 years, every month, sometimes twice a month.
How does it actually work with this group? I mean, you said there were thousands of souls all tied together. Is it kind of like a group thing? I mean, common denominator? I guess collective consciousness?
Yeah, I would like to. Yeah, I think that's very, very important, because, you see, I find with people I talk to, they have a great deal of hesitation about this, because, you know, they're born and raised within the Christian beliefs of that you live your life, and then when you die, nobody dies, but according to them, when you die, you go up to the spiritual world, and you go in judgment before God, and then you either given a harp or you're given a shovel. Or if with the other group, then you'll have eternal sex. Well, that's not the way it is at all. There's no such thing. And when you cross over, you're going back home, where we've lived for millions and millions and millions of years, some of us for billions of years. And that is our home. Where we are here on Earth is only a very temporary thing, and where we come to gain experience.
Stan, does this apply to other places, not just Earth? I mean, is this a universal truth? Does it apply to everyone in the universe?
Everything. Yeah. Well, there's nobody like of all. There are some civilizations out there, planetary civilizations out there, that they are so vastly beyond us in spiritualism. They all have a spiritualism. I would like to make this comment about this. One time there was a discussion about this particular matter about, well, you know, do we have our atheists who don't believe in this sort of thing, and there's no God, and how it all came about, of course, in the Big Bang. And I believe it was the Transcenders were asked about that. If not, it was somebody else, anyways, in the spirit world. And their reply is, there are no atheists in the universe. They only exist on Earth. And I thought that was a very relevant answer.
Strange.
All the Pleiadians, the Byrtes, the Syrians, all of these alien societies, civilizations vastly beyond ours in technology and spiritualism, all believe in God. They know there's God created this vast universe, well, vast universes, the spiritual kingdom, and it is mysterious beyond our wildest imagination.
I wonder why we here on Earth are different from the rest of the universe in this belief. I mean...
That's a good question. Jerry, that's a good question. I just dealt with that last night. And we're going to divert here for a minute, if you don't mind, Jerry.
Sure.
Okay, about that particular matter. Now, the transgenders told me in one of our discussions that one of the biggest threats facing mankind, well, earth changes, you know, earthquakes, tsunamis, this sort of thing is a very serious challenge to mankind, but it will not destroy mankind, will not destroy the earth. It is going to start taking place maybe this fall, this winter, and up to 2012, and then it gets even worse. But it will not destroy the earth. Now, the world will be facing an economic and financial collapse. That will not destroy the world. International terrorism is growing. Al-Qaeda has a dirty nuclear bomb, and they have weapons of mass destruction. They have it today. That is a worrisome thing. But that will not destroy the world. But our environmental crisis, our pollution of our atmosphere will, and the CO2 now in our atmosphere is around at 9% average worldwide, worse than China, of course, increasing at 1% annually with our industrialization and the gross number of influx of cars and all this sort of thing, and of course the increase in population, that doesn't help. The deforestation, all this sort of thing. So all of this is speeding up the process. Then, but it's increasing 1% a year, but the critical mass in which humans cannot survive in an atmosphere is 22% of CO2. And we're increasing at 1% a year, we're now at 9%. So you can figure for yourself. So I asked the transgenders about this. In fact, I discussed with them on many occasions. And they told me, there are countless thousands of alien societies who have polluted their environment to total extinction. Not a single being, not a planet, not a plant, not an animal survived. Total extinction. Countless thousands, maybe in the millions, over, you know, what I'm talking about, over throughout the our history. And then, here about a year ago, the Alien Council, consisting of those eight planetary systems I told you about, they form into a council. They meet regularly about every month. They discuss Earth because they monitor us regularly. And they decided at that meeting, especially through the prodding of the Pleiadians, who are sort of our guardians type of thing, that they should do something about, they should intervene to clean up our atmosphere, otherwise we're on that path of destruction. And It wasn't an easy pitch, but finally the Asian Council agreed, yes, they would intervene. Now, that was about a year ago. But they were afraid as suddenly they appeared over Earth, thousands or hundreds of their UFOs. It would create massive fear and panic and confusion. And they were afraid they would be viewed as a threat, and they would not be able to interact with mankind. So they decided what they would do. They would intervene one step at a time. They would first fly over, I have a UFO display over our principal cities on October the 13th, 2010. They would not land, they would not communicate with us, and then they would continue this process.
Hold on, Stan, we have to take a break. We'll be right back, though, and I want to follow that up. About the sighting over New York on that date, the date you just mentioned. Now, some people say it's balloons, but I want to hear your answer and your ideas. Stan Fulham is our guest. Challenges of Change is the name of the book. I'm Jerry Pippin.
go beyond the obvious and make Roswell, New Mexico your brave new destination for fun and intrigue. Learn the truth about Roswell's history and see why Roswell's the mother of extraterrestrial connections. Whether you're looking for UFOs and aliens, cultural attractions, outdoor recreation, or even chewy mozzarella, there's plenty to uncover about this uncommon Roswell, New Mexico place. To find out more information on the mysteries of Roswell, visit www.roswellmysteries.com. Roswell, New Mexico. Visitors welcome.
Hello, this is Jerry Pippin, and welcome back to our show. Stan Fulham is our guest on the line from Canada, and Challenges of Change is the name of his book. We have a link to where you can buy that book. It's being offered on the Internet only right now on his website. And when we went to the break, Stan, you mentioned the fact of a UFO demonstration, I guess would be the best term for it, on October 13th. Now, it's well past October 13th now, and there have been quite a few sightings this month in the month of October, besides the one in Manhattan, as you know. I'll get back to that in a minute, but I just got this report, an email from a listener who said UFO sightings were made on Route 7 and Route 41 near the Pennsylvania-Delaware line. It occurred at 7 o'clock, that's Eastern time, and let me read it. It says, these things had no sound, and they slowly flew by. Quite a few cars pulled off and started looking. Many were taking pictures. Now, you were saying that ETs will begin showing up over major cities and making their presence known gradually to kind of, for better or worse of a term, breaking us into the idea that they exist. All of these things will happen over major populated areas. Now, you predicted October 13th, and there was an event, as I mentioned, in Manhattan on that day. Now, officially, the media is saying that it was a bunch of balloons released by some school children. But you say definitely it was not balloons, right?
Yes. Now, Jerry, on that thing, you see, is that, as I wrote in, and I wrote this in my book about a year ago. Now, that's the thing. I know my son was quite put out with me about that because he thought I should never mention the date. Because he says, if it doesn't happen on October the 13th, he said, you've lost all your credibility. I said, yes. But I said, I place a great deal of faith in my source, the transcenders. And the transcenders tell me it's a tentative date. And the reason why it's a tentative date, because the aliens, like us, have free will and choice. And on that day, the situation on Earth may be so bad, because of earthquakes or financial collapse or whatever, that they may determine to postpone until the 15th or the end of the month or November or December. But it will take place. But I decided to go with October 13th in any case. I placed all my eggs in one basket and gambled on that. Now, about 3 weeks ago, Jerry, and I think you're about the first person I'm talking to about this matter. About 3 weeks ago, I was talking to transcenders, and I asked the transcenders, well, is this now still going to take place for the UFO display? And they said yes. But the transcenders, the alien consuls decided that their intervention at this time would be just too much over our principal cities. It would be perceived as a threat. So what they will do, they'll focus in on one particular city at this time and do more in the future. But they chose New York City because it's an international city, cosmopolitan center, and because the people there are more blasé and they're more acceptable to the fact of UFOs, and they won't be overwhelmed by it. And the other thing, it is pretty well the city of the world. So they decided they would do it over New York City. And that is the reason why it was done there. Now, there were other sightings over other cities, San Francisco, and including China. There were quite a number of sightings over China. And I asked the transcenders about that. Was that all part of that UFO display? And they said yes and no. The focus was New York. These other things were other, they were the Pleiadians. No others, it was just the Pleiadians. But they were there on scientific investigation and doing other things. And there's a lot of strange things happened in China, but the government chooses to try and quell all of this information because they feel that they got enough problems without having to deal with this. So, that explains what happened in New York, and there weren't balloons. You know, that's nonsense. And I've been asked about that. And Jerry, I want to tell you about this. I've been at this now for about 60 years. And I can remember going way back when I discussed with UFOs and my particular incident with the UFO sighting during the war and this sort of thing. And I met with nothing but absolute ridicule. And I was reading all the UFO books, and I remember reading a book written by one particular scientist who claims that it was very likely swamp gas. You maybe remember that, Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
They called it swamp gas.
Yeah, I
find that so offensive that, and talking to people who then question my sanity, who you know would point to the Bible and say, haven't you read the good book yet, Stan? Yes, I have. Well, it's all in the good book. There's no such thing as agents out there, this sort of thing. I put up with those 60 years of that nonsense, and so I don't want to bother with this anymore. And so when these naysayers, the professional naysayers, come up with, well, it's swamp gas, or in this case here, it's balloons. These balloons lit up by these kids would rise to about 100 or 200 feet. They wouldn't go very high. They're very small, and they would soon disappear. These UFOs were up there maneuvering. They were large, especially like the mothership was very large. And they sat there for about 45 minutes. And they would disappear and reappear. And so in total, there might have been a total of several hundred involved in this matter. And so if that isn't evidence enough, I don't know what is. But don't talk to me about balloons. I tell people, look, don't waste my time. I just refuse to.
Stan, I want to talk about the book a minute. I'm confused. Challenge of Change. You act like it's a new book, but I've seen it before, I think.
The title of the book is Challenges of Change. What is confusing some people is that the second edition I sold through Amazon, but then we ran out of copies, and I was intending to revise it, so I didn't pursue that anymore. But there's still a bit of information there on Amazon, but that's a second edition. And I, of course, we don't have any more copies of that. The third edition is the one I'm talking about now, and it's, especially the latter part, has changed quite a bit. I kept the title, except the edition. And the thing is that it is, we self-published. Now, some people say, well, that's a mistake. Well, anyway, we'll see. Published, and we handle it here in Winnipeg. Now, they can order through our website, which is sites.google.com/challenges of change.
I guess for clarity's sake, we should just say that we have a link to it here where the broadcast is on jerrypippin.com. And they can order it through your website. We have a link to it.
So that's the best way. And I also, Jerry, if I may, and we're getting hundreds of emails and hundreds of telephone calls about that.
Okay, Stan, so I understand it. They're going to have this show of force over other cities around the world. Is that right? Especially around North America?
Yes. Well, as I mentioned to you, Jerry, this was the first of the process. And of them intervening and introducing themselves to mankind. They'll become more aggressive in the future. They will appear again very shortly, and I will deal with that in a few weeks' time. I will mention that. I'll make a public announcement about that. In fact, Jerry, I may call you and I'd give you that information in a few weeks' time. And they will appear again over another city or possibly two. And I don't have all the information yet, so I'm waiting to get more information in late November. And because, you see, it's not going to be another year before they appear. They're going to start speeding up the process. Now, they eventually they become more aggressive. And then at one stage, I don't know when yet, when they decided to do this, they may communicate in some fashion. But by the year 2014, they plan, as part of this process, to actually appear before the United Nations. And because they said in 2015 our environmental situation is so bad that they must start cleaning up our atmosphere, otherwise we millions, hundreds of millions of people will die. So by 2015 is their target date. And so they want to be in our... So I asked the transgenders, well, why can't they do this, clean up our atmosphere with their very high technology, and do this in a matter of minutes, maybe it's not. They said no. They actually got to come into your third dimension. They got to come in within your atmosphere and use their technology to clean up. And this will take maybe, it could take 200-300 spacecraft to do this with their technology, and it may take as long as 12 months or a little longer to clean up your atmosphere, to get rid of all this poisonous gas, CO, carbon dioxide, and all the other gases that are in there. So this is what they plan to do, and that brings up the question, Jerry, and a spiritual one, a philosophical one as well. So I raised the question. Here are these Pleiadians who have lived far longer than we have. In fact, they watched our development over the last several millions of years and guided us and helped us in this study in many, many ways. And they've seen countless thousands of other alien civilizations who have polluted themselves to total extinction. I mentioned, like I mentioned to you earlier. Now, it raised the question, doesn't it? Then why are they trying to save mankind? Why are we such an exception? Are we God's special creation? In a way, I suppose maybe we are. Because, and I asked the transgenders about that. I thought I found that very, very strange. And they said, Earth is a very unique planetary system. It has the greatest emotional energies of any planet in the universe. The energies, the emotional energies you have are quite extraordinary. Aliens, a lot of them, like the Bertis, for example, have absolutely no emotions at all. Now, they're brilliant, and they deal with scientific matters of all types. That's all they do all their lives. But they don't enjoy sports. They don't enjoy... And I said, well, don't the other aliens have sports? They said, no, hardly. That's rarely you find any alien with a sports. What about music and painting? Hardly does that exist. The only one closest to us is the Pleiadians, and they have a bit of music with not quite, of course, not similar to ours, but different, but they have some form of music.
I wonder what their music is like. Rock? Country?
But the thing is, though, Jerry, is that so they don't have any emotion, but they're fascinated by that. So, for example, they monitor all of our activities on Earth. They monitor our TV. They monitor our radio programs. Who knows? They might be listening to this one. And they have the technology to convert the language, whether it's English or Chinese or Russian or German, whatever it is, into their own language immediately. And to give you some idea, is that there was over 300 billion aliens who watched the Vancouver Olympic the Olympic Games.
Really?
Over 300 billion are watching the Vancouver Olympics, Winter Olympics.
I wonder how that works, Stan. Do they have a network or something? Maybe we can get on it. The Palladian Radio Network, which you're... Never mind. Go ahead, Stan.
Well, yeah, well, they have spacecraft all around the Earth right now. They're up there. There may be as many as 200-300 up there. They monitor the Earth. We can't see them because they're in the fourth dimension. But they can pick up all of our communications, and then they transfer that to their own systems and send it back to their planets, which could be millions of light years away. And but the thing is, though, you know, they watch us because they have nothing like it. For example, in our sports, in our football and our hockey, which are very aggressive sports, and they see all these hooting and yelling and screaming and loving and kissing human beings on there. They don't understand it because they have no emotions, but they're fascinated by it. For example, transgenders were telling me that, you know, they were watching the Winter Olympics, and here were these people in almost violent competition with one another, like in boxing and wrestling and this sort of thing. And then they stand on the podium and they hug and they kiss. And they can't understand this. It does not make sense to them. But they are fascinated by us. So we are unique in the world. Now, why are we unique in the world in terms of emotional energies? I don't know. Maybe when I get back, I'm going to ask the transgenders about that in the future. And another reason why, according to transgenders, there was hope for us. We are quite a spiritual people, and we are going to change. Now, we are experiencing a rise, a change in our spiritual consciousness right now, today. And it is advancing, it will be advancing within the next 10 to 20 years very rapidly. So there will be a major change in our spiritual consciousness. That is what changes the world. That is the end of our old consciousness, the spiritual consciousness. That is what the Mayan prophecies talked about. It's not the end of our physical world. It's the end of our spiritual consciousness and the rebuilding of a new one, which starts to take place. In fact, it is taking place now. But as far as the Mayan prophecies and the end of the world, please relax. It's nothing. It doesn't end. The transcenders will be done. I mean, the aliens, or specifically the Palladians, will be down here every year, every few months. And then it'll appear before the United Nations in 2014. And then they'll work and clean up our planets, and then we get problems. But also, Jerry, I'm disappointed in a way because, you know, there's more to my book than just about UFOs. I deal with a number of other issues like the nuclear threat and hope. Let's just deal with that very briefly.
Stan, what do you know about this? The ET intervention and the nuclear weapons, that story.
Yes. And what has been written and talked about, you know, Robert Hastings wrote about UFO nukes, which is very, very true. I had that information about 30 years ago. And so I included some of the information. I think we have the time. Just wait. I wrote in the book about the intervention of the Pleiadians, the aliens, in our missile silo sites in Montana and elsewhere. And also the same thing happened in Russia. And I had talked to the transgenders about it, and of course they see all of this and they tell me exactly what was happening. So they said, the agents that intervened in our nuclear arsenals providing powerful warning of the dangerous impact of nuclear arms. The following is a brief summary of that dialogue. I said to the transgenders, there are more military and government officials retired who are speaking out about their experiences with ubiquitous conspiracy of silence on the UFO alien phenomena. Recently, USAF officer retired spoke publicly in which they reported that on May 16, 1967, UFOs hovered over their 490th Strategic Missile Squadron, and Robert Hastings also wrote about that. My own personal contacts with a senior NORAD intelligence officer about 30 years ago confirmed what Robert Hastings had reported. Now, NORAD had done a thorough investigation of the alien nuclear missile incidents because they perceived them to be a serious threat to continental defense, which was NORAD's mandate. And finally, the transcenders confirmed the reality of NORAD and Hastings' reports. Another squadron reported 10 missiles shot down by the UFOs. There were other reports that alien spacecraft neutralized Minuteman missiles in flight. Two more nuclear rockets were also destroyed in flight. And in other cases, nuclear-armed satellites have simply disappeared. That's right, just disappeared. Now, obviously, this is extremely important alien disruption of our nuclear arsenal. So what is your comment about this important event, I asked the transgenders. They said that there's the Palladians involved here, and basically their message is a serious warning to mankind of the tremendous damage that could result from this nuclear activity. You don't go and set off nuclear warheads in space without having a ripple effect. Basically, they are saying don't do that without actually stopping them from sending the missiles up there. You just stop them from the potential consequences. Also, it will remind mankind that you are not alone in reality, and think twice about potentially what they may do with those missiles. You may think that you have all those safeguards, and you think that you can control this and that. However, there are always ways of getting into the system. So from the events, the military performed a whole series of security measures that made the whole concept of the metals and guidance systems and the initiating processes much more secure. It actually inserted a paranoia into the military. So they took stronger steps to maintain a stronger sense of security and control over the missiles and thereby alleviating the probability of a nuclear incident. So I asked the transit, did the Palladians also interact with the Russians? missiles, and was their interaction effective? And this is what they reported to me. Indeed, the electrical system down through the launching systems were infiltrated. Lights flashed on and off repeatedly, and in some instances, the launching control panels lit up as the countdown was activated. A very frightening situation for the Russian military, since they had no means of stopping the electrical interruptions. The launching room staff watched in horror as the launching lights flashed on numbers steadily from 30, 29, 28, 27 to almost zero. At that critical moment, the lights stopped flashing and the system returned to standby. I said, well, Transcender, that must have been a very terrifying experience for the Russians, since they have been since they have thought that somebody at the highest level in Moscow was starting a nuclear war against the United States, which really nobody wanted, and there was nothing they could do to stop it. What absolute horror. And the Transcender said, yes. But what the agents were teaching the Americans and the Russians, that if we can do this, the terrorists could do it. So you better refine your security systems. And since then, of course, they have. And now it's pretty well secure.
Stan, thanks for reading that. That's right out of your book. Talking about the ETs and nuclear weapons, how do they really feel about that? About nuclear weapons?
Yeah, well, one of the things right now, Jerry, I'm concerned about, and I write about in my book, is that I know now, because nothing is hidden from the Transcender. They see everything that's going on. And they tell me about the very strange and interesting things happen in the caves, in the Himalayan and Al-Qaeda caves. They have developed a dirty nuclear bomb, and they have weapons of mass destruction. Now, they have hundreds of scientists and technical staff from all over the world working there, have been working there for years. They are highly paid. They got a lot of money. But there's a conflict that's developed between these people. We have the jihadists. They're under the control of al-Zawahiri. And there was only about 25 to 30 of these jihadists, these diehards, who were quite prepared to die for their beliefs. But the scientists are quite secular people, and the technical staff. And there's several hundred, I think about 1,200 of them. And they don't want to die. So there's that conflict now that goes on there. And they know as the Americans are approaching their caves that ultimately that day of reckoning will arrive. Now, they have that bomb. And the principal enemy is Israel. Why don't they drop it on Israel? That is a very interesting moral question they have. Then al-Zawahiri and his jihadists have considered that. And they thought, well, the bomb is so devastating, if they dropped it on Israel, it will also kill hundreds of thousands of Muslims. Would Allah approve of that? So they have this problem, a moral problem, you can call it the containment of collateral damage, so to speak. And so they're holding off. But what they may do as the Americans approach is that they may explode the bomb amongst American troops in desperation, and they have weapons of mass destruction. What I'm suggesting, Jerry, and I do hope that you'll get people to think about this and talk about it, it is time for the American government to offer a general amnesty to al-Qaeda. Because I told you about the moral philosophical problems that's generated right now in the caves. This is the time to do it. And offer them, to remove them from the cave, providing they hand over the bomb and their weapons of mass destruction, and relocate them to any land that they so choose under a United Nations administration, to divorce themselves from all al-Qaeda activities and all that stuff. They'll have to be conditions, but they should do so. But the Transcenders warned me there's little time left. So we should deal with that. That's one thing. And there are
so
others.
So, Stan, I take it you had more reasons to write the book than just UFOs.
Oh, well, of course. And that was one of the other one was the financial and the economic collapse of the United States and the world.
And you feel this financial collapse is imminent?
It's very imminent, yes. And when it happens, it could happen, not necessarily in the United States, it could happen in Greece, it could happen elsewhere, but then there's a domino effect, and the world soon collapsed. And the Transcenders see that, but they see the future. And we are under 15 to 20 years of total financial and economic confusion and massive problems of all kinds. And what they're saying is that it doesn't have to be. All you got to do, there's a solution to it. And it will come eventually, is to accept the trade dollar, the international trade dollar. So all trade at the international level is done through this international trade dollar. Now, every nation can keep its own national currencies, but any international trade is done that level. But in order to get to that level, you have first got to get rid of all these massive foreign debts we have. And they're saying the way what we're going to do right now is for all nations to devalue their currencies down to 10% of current value. And so who would be the greatest benefactor of this? Would probably be the United States, because the United States owes trillions of dollars. Well, that may be so, but the thing is, the United States is the economic engine of the world, and unless the engine unless that engine gets back into operation, then there's going to be absolute chaos.
Stan, I'm afraid the clock has us, so we're about out of time. I would urge people to pick up your book and read it, order it from your website. I mean, it has everything in there besides UFOs. You got a lot of good financial advice, some world political advice, and you even cover terrorism. Sounds like a good book.
Yes, yes, indeed. And that's one thing I wish people like yourself, and I don't rely upon the public, I don't rely upon the politicians, it's people like you, Bill Burns, and all these people and who are going to bring this whole issue to a head, and it's got to be done soon. And I thank you very, very much, Jerry.
Stan Fulham has been our guest. The book is Challenges of Change. It's available from his website. We have a link to that at jerrypippin.com. Thanks, Stan, and thanks, everyone, for listening. I'm Jerry Pippin.